This is Chan. I'm the new ham. KO4WWZ. Just wanted to let you know, I was listening the night that you announced that you had the cancer on your tongue. I just want you to know that I'm going to be praying for you, sir. I enjoyed listening to you, and I hope to hear you again on the airwaves soon. It's KO4WWZ. I'll be clear.
KO4WWZ, thank you for the comments to Walt, and I'm sure he appreciates those prayers and comments and support that he's getting from his fellow ham community. So appreciate all of that for him. Walt's a good guy, and he needs all the help he can get. Anyone else for comments or check-ins, please call W2MJB or Net Control.
W2MJB. I didn't know y'all would still be here. This is Whiskey Uniform 2 Tango Rusty. Mobile and Duncan headed back to more. And Walt's got my prayers. Know he's what he's dealing with. Been there, done that. W2T, back to net.
W2MJB, net control for the Blue Ridge 2 meter net, recognizing WU2T, Rusty and Warren. Thanks for checking in tonight, Rusty. Yeah, it was going a little longer than usual for me. But it was great. It was great having the comments and the roundabout, I guess, between helping the individuals here on the net find some of the resources they need to get a hold of. And I even took notes for myself, so when I have a radio blow up, which I'm sure I'll have, that we're able to get some things repaired. So this is W2MJB Net Control. The net report will be submitted electronically. I'll break here for a minute, and you should, for those who are still listening, should hear it here in a minute. W2MJB, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with our thanks for checking in. We will return the repeater back to normal amateur use, but just before doing that, I think KO4NUE will be calling the net tomorrow night. I can't remember if somebody else is doing it on Tuesdays. It might be Anna. But anyway, please come back and check in with the net controller tomorrow night. Have a great evening, and 7-3 to everyone.
A4JBQ, KO4NUE.
JBQ here.
I got something for you out of this little book I got. That nasty word impedance. And I'd like to add that the word impedance is in bold letters in the text. And it says impedance, a word that gets a lot of bandying around in amateur conversations. It also says at the end of the paragraph, which I'm not going to read, the inner workings of actual circuits that control impedance belong in the field of engineering rather than hobbying. Fortunately, you do not need to know them in order to build and operate an amateur radio station. So, just wanted to let you know, according to this book, I don't need to know it.
I'm interested that you would point that out. It is from an era of vacuum tubes. And with vacuum tubes, it was easy to ignore because it really has no effect. But on transistor final amplifiers, the MOSFETs that actually put the signal over the air, it is of critical importance. Impedance mismatches will burn the things up. And that's the story there. But I'm glad you mentioned that again, because that you did speak of it earlier, and we got, you know, interrupted and pulled off the topic. I'm glad. And it doesn't surprise me that a publication of that era would dismiss impedance as something quite unimportant and only belonging to the engineer. but it's critical today. And it is why it's not just mentioned from time to time. It can be quite important in building of antennas. And, you know, that is, I just want to say this for the benefit of anybody that might be listening. Antennas are just as important as radios, maybe more so. Because if you can't get the signal out or get a signal in, you're deaf, you know, in that sense. But thank you for filling that in for me, Chad.
Like I said, I was telling Mark in the back of this book, it's a very interesting read. It really is. I mean, I am convinced that things written back then were, I don't know that they were written on a different grade level. They were just written differently. And it just seems to be something that I can understand. It's just direct and to the point, and, you know, comes with pretty simple drawings. And it's kind of neat. I don't like to read, but I love to read, you know, technical things, blueprints or a map. You know, I can look at those for hours. But, you know, this is pretty interesting. You know, I thought I'd never seen the amateur code before, so I thought I'd share that with Mark. I thought it was interesting.
Share it on the net, because a lot of people, I'll bet you, they're just a bunch of people out there who are involved in the hobby, perhaps been involved in the hobby for years, and have never heard of an amateur radio code. It's a code of ethics, I suppose. Another code would be Morse, you know. That's a different kettle of fish. But I have done a little research since you and I spoke earlier, and there is a more recent update to the amateur radio code in a publication from 2011. And that's only, what, 11 years ago? And the wording is quite different. It seems like it was written by a different person, but it's using the same headings, I think. The six headings, if I'm right, but expresses it in different words. Now, you're right that I was reading something today that words are living things. They're spoken by living beings, of course. It's our language. And it changes over time. The meaning of the words change over time. And the context in which the listener finds themselves, that, of course, changes too. So I had opportunity at one point in life to study speech, how to write them, how to deliver them, how to structure speech. And it is imperative that you speak to be heard correctly. And that'll change with the crowd. To write for everybody is a challenge. I once heard that newspapers, now this was years ago, newspapers were written to an eighth grade education level. So if you had finished the eighth grade, you should be able to read a newspaper just fine. I'm not sure that it hasn't come down a grade or two into seventh or sixth grade reading newspaper today. So anyway, education level and also the climate. In 1928, when I think of the copyright on your book, might be, if it still had one, you're probably missing that page. 1928, the world was heading into a very difficult time. just coming out of the Depression and, no, that's wrong, just coming out of the Roaring Twenties. You know, this is the tail end of the Roaring Twenties, and we punctuated that era with a world war, which was the second in a few years, actually, if you take a look at history. I don't know if you studied the two world wars that our country was involved in, and what was surrounding it, what was in the air, and the people. It changes everything when you put things in context. And we should try to remember that. History has to be taken in context. But I had this, what's the full title of this thing? An Introduction to Amateur Radio. It was published in a PDF, a really nicely put together PDF. The fellow who published it, his call sign is KF7ETX. That's Kilo Foxtrot 7 Echo Tango X-Ray. I could make it available to you, but it's out there on the net. Introduction to Amateur Radio. It has a more recent publication date, and you might get that and then compare it with the print copy that you have. It's quite different. KK4 JBQ.
Okay, so this one was written by John Huntoon, W1RW, General Manager, ARRL. So that may be a clue there. There's also in toward the back is that it also says that as a amateur radio operator, you are required by the FCC to log all calls listing the time, date, frequency, band, operator signature. That's you, unless you have a visitor. The power input, whether it was phone or CW, and the time of the ending of any contact. So, when was dropping a requirement to maintain a log dropped?
To my knowledge, it never has been dropped. It is an expectation that you keep a log, a station log. And that includes more than contacts. What you read there would insinuate that that's really the only important thing. It was, at one time, a strongly enforced requirement. Not so much anymore. But our hobby has been, the history of amateur radio is just filled with interesting facts. For instance, how did we come to have the call signs that we do from the earliest days? How did that develop over time? And the bands that we operate on, what are considered amateur radio bands today, are far different from what they were in earlier times. And the reason for our having the band privileges that we have in the license classes that we operate is strictly, what's the word? It slipped my mind. It's incentive, that's the word. Licensing in amateur radio has not always been incentive-based. The incentive to get privileges on amateur bands is connected directly to your call sign. It's not always been that way. Sometime in the 30s, it changed. License classes have changed radically over time. It used to be that the technician class was not allowed to transmit. Technicians were only experimenters. They only experimented in the hobby and published. I mean, things have been just... But where we are today is a better place. It's a better place. That's... it's an interest of mine. History is an interest, and the history of this hobby is fascinating, truly.
Well, the guy in that book that I took and let Larry look at 5 or 6 years ago that he told me is on the internet, back 1922 was the date on the book. They were starting the different number classes then. Like this is the 4th district. The 1st district was up around Maine and whatnot like that. And as far as the classes goes of 1922, they showed them on that too for that time. But as Larry says, over the decades, there's been all kinds of different rules. Different kinds of rules at one time or another. You need to take a look at that Radio for Everybody book. KI4LZI.
ABQ, I thought if Andy were listening, he would chime in on something involving the history of the hobby. It's kind of a study for Andy, and I'm proud of it. KK4JBQ.
In there, and it's KO4NUE. So, page 282. This is interesting. It says, talking about phone procedures, how to, you know, what the rules and regulations are. It says, we all assume that everyone has a copy of the American Amateur's License Manual. But if you do not, you may send an envelope, post paid for $1 to the RRL in Newington, Connecticut, and they'll send you the complete rules and regulations. It's got the address listed in here too, so I think I may put a dollar in the envelope and see what happens.
That's I dare you to do it.
It's a done deal. I'll send it out. It goes, let's see, to it's to postpaid to the ARRL in Newington, Connecticut, 06111. What it says.
KI4LZI. If I heard you right, that book's from 1928. Well, mine's from 1922. Whoever was in charge of that in ARRL back in the 20s, they've probably been... Who knows how many people have been at that post between now and then. So, if you get anything out of that, you know, especially at that price, it'll stun me. Go ahead, Larry. KI4LZI.
You're right. It would be stunning if you got even a response. It'd be good for giggles, you know, up there in Newington. And oh, by the way, as far as history is concerned, Newington is not the only, certainly not the first. There was a previous location of the league, and they moved, I can't remember the date, they moved to Newington. So if your book indicates a Newington address, it might not be, the book might be an edition that's later than 28. The information that I have here doesn't mention the call sign, that you gave. It's, you know, the gentleman that was on the net earlier and had probably looked at this same thing that I'm looking at, gave the W9EEA, Whiskey 9 Echo Echo Alpha call sign as the person who contributed the updated amateur's code. So it might not be 28. I was thinking, is there anything else but the copyright page where anything else in that book? I'm sure you haven't looked at every page and everything on every page, but there might be some other indicator of when it was published, and information might be online. See, that one page, that one very important page has the, what is that, library, or the Library of Congress catalog number, which would date it. Also, the copyright would date it. And it also has, you know, what edition it is. If it's the 25th edition of the book, it's later. But the first edition was in 1928. That's why that number entered the conversation.
Interesting. Here, I was the fellow who brought that up about the 1928, but I did speculate that that was the time that that particular code was written. That was the date given for the code, and I speculated that it was incorporated into that book sometime later. So I never intended to suggest that that was when the book was written, only that that's when the code itself was written.
Well, that clarifies a lot for me. I'm the fellow that picked up on the date that the code was written and imagined that it was the date of the book's publishing. So that's my mistake, and I apologize for misleading anybody. Yeah, thank you for coming back with that.
For NUE, I'm just not seeing a catalog number or anything like that in here. Let me make sure I got this. I don't think it's 20s or 30s. But I'm not sure the verbiage is geared toward World War II. But there is several mentions of civil defense. And Ares is called Eric, A-R-E-C. I'm assuming that is what our Ares is today. But the other interesting thing is how to determine the length of a resonant antenna. And the number used is not 468. It's, I'll have to find it, but if I remember right, I want to say it was 492, which is a little bit perplexing to me because I built quite a few antennas and I've never used that number before. So I don't know. I don't know. I would have to say 50s or 60s, maybe. That's just me, though.
Thank you. I can perhaps clarify the differences in the divisor. The current divisor that we use takes into account the velocity factor of copper. And that will make a lot of difference. It will make that much difference, at least. And the earlier divisor didn't take that into account.
KO4NUE here. So, okay, well, it's, like I said, it's a very interesting read. And I'm kind of enjoying it. It has a transmission line table in here with the velocity factor loss in dB per 100 feet and the type of coaxial cable, which I think is pretty interesting. RG58/U, RG59/U, and twin lead standard and TV ladder line 1-inch spacing. No other coax listed. I think that's kind of interesting now because, I mean, there's 15 or 20 different types of coax you can use, but that's, you know, it's kind of interesting, I guess.
You were saying the 50s for sure, but coax didn't really come into existence, best I can recall. I don't remember where I saw it or read it somewhere. Till sometime World War II, somewhere along that range there. I don't remember where I saw it, but I saw it somewhere. So there wasn't a whole lot of coax, not a whole lot of it, I'll put it that way. As we know today, if you go back in the distance, way back, and most of what was around way back was mostly HF. So you had ladder line and whatnot like that. There was no VHF FM here like we use here way back. Say back in the 50s and before, it just wasn't yet being used. Matter of fact, commercial FM, the FM broadcast band didn't come in really to be until after World War II. KI4LZI.
QOG. Got to Google the author's name and find out what years he was general director of the ARRL, provided he wrote the book while he was general manager. That might give you some idea of the time frame.
Head out. Make sure I got it.
Every little fact. Chris, thank you for that. That is a way to track it. I was thinking of other things that may have been on that copyright page, which is where most of the information is. Now, the author, I mean, his name should be strewn throughout the book. I think most authors like to see their name in print. But also the publisher of the book. You might contact them or actually go online and look at when the book was published by that publishing company. But I do think that's on the copyright page, too.
Chris, and a dollar. I'm just going to send them my dollar and say, hey, tell me what you know about this book.
There you go. You might scan and send a copy of the page along with it. Because you will stir up at least some laughter. You know, this guy really thinks we're going to send him anything for a dollar. That's great. It's just, I just dare you to do it.
Right in it, right? Go ahead, sir.
Looking at a page that says that Paul M. Siegel was serving as ARRL's general counsel at the time when he wrote that code.
Well, that's when the code was written, right? Not the book. Okay. So, another interesting thing here in the back is tips, you know, tips for the new ham is they have a picture of a light bulb. I'm not sure what kind of light bulb it is. It looks like a regular automotive bulb. And they have soldered a wire on the center contact of the bulb and formed a loop and soldered the other end of the wire to the base of the bulb. And it, like I said, it looks just like a small automotive bulb. And that is a RF detector. Obviously, it doesn't tell you, you know, how much RF is detected, but you can, you know, evidently they got a little cartoon in here. This book's full of cartoons, I'd like to add, that you can wave, you know, you move this thing around, and if the light bulb lights up, you've got RF. I mean, pretty simple. And the other thing is on page 287, I'm going to have to send a picture of this to Patrick. There's a cartoon in here with three amateur radio operators who have absolutely no clue what they're doing trying to put up an antenna. I think that's hilarious, especially after last weekend.
From N1DMB, this article I'm looking at also says that the when it's kind of weird because it says that the code has appeared in every issue of the Radio Amateur's Handbook since 1927, even though it says that the code itself was written in 1928, so that doesn't quite jive.
Well, that's the way history is written, isn't it? KK4JBQ.
That's pretty neat. So, in the back, let me make sure I got this. There's a list of abbreviations for CW work. And, oh, I don't know, there's two pages of them in here. And I've seen some information on, you know, quick codes for CW. But this is two entire pages of it. It's pretty neat. I've sent some pictures and send it to you. I've never seen something, I don't want to say primitive. It's not primitive. It's just, I don't know. Just the text is different. The format is different. And it's, you know, handwritten drawings that have been reprinted, you know. But in the back, very last page, there is a schematic that you can cut out, and it is let me let my radio drop. Back scale template for a 3.5 megahertz tuner section of the 5-band receiver, and this guy has cut it out, and it is taped back into the booklet with duct tape, three pieces of duct tape. But this guy, whoever had this thing, built this. There's plans in here for a 5-band receiver and making your own copper etchings, board etchings. And there's stains all over it. Looks like etching compound on it or something. But, I mean, that's pretty neat. I mean, pretty interesting.
Book is a bit of history in and of itself. Too bad that fellow didn't put his own name in the book somewhere.
Look and see. I haven't looked through every page, but I can scan through it, I guess. But there's handwriting all in it. I'll look through those. There's also some just newspaper clippings of how to build, you know, this or antennas or this, that, and the other, just stuff that's been stuck in here over the years. But I think it's pretty neat.
occurs to me. Do you think perhaps the book belonged to this Silent Key, that the book came from?
Yes, it did. It certainly did.
Answer, at least for now, understanding when the fellow was licensed, I don't know if you have his call sign, that you've heard his call sign, but the history of call signs are online, who held the call sign and when they held it and who the next person might have been, if that's the case. Like with Donna's call sign, it was held by her father before, and all of that information is online.
Tells the guy, those call signs like that, as he said about Donna and her father, you'll find online, but there's like right here on this very repeater from the late 70s and 80s. If you go to look it up, a call sign on somebody and it's currently not in use, you'll find that it's a dead call sign. Because I got a bunch of them that I remember used to be active right here back in the early 80s and late 70s now that you won't find that even anybody has the call sign. Not anymore, and it's a dead call sign. So it depends on if someone's using it now, or if it's a dead call sign. KI4LZI.
4NUE. Let me make sure I got this. I'll change gears here for a minute. So I got another QSL card in the mail today. And, well, not today, last week, I think. I'm not sure I've told you about it, Larry, but, and Andy, or anybody else listening for that matter. It is, VK2UGB, Bungwahl, Australia. And on the front of it, it's got a picture of this nice little beach. And it says, someone has to live here. And it says, Chad, hot, wet summer here now, which is a great change from the fires we had last year. 73s, I can't read his name. But, so there you go, Bungwahl, Australia.
So that would suggest that, do you have an Australian call in your log?
14.219 megahertz on 28 July.
About that. So congratulations. That is that's quite a trip. The other side of the world. that's good. And well, so that was July of this past year.
28 July, yeah.
Well, that's pretty fast for it to get through. I don't know how you logged the calls, whether it was Bureau or Call Book of the World or whatever, but that's pretty quick. Congratulations. There you go. And this goes to, I don't know, have we spoken about this in this conversation, or I'm remembering another one, where we talked about the legality, the legal obligation there is to keep a station log. I don't think I got around to saying that a station log, while it is helpful to, you know, and very interesting as you read it as part of your own personal history, where you've been, when you were there, and who you spoke to, and all that, but you also log things like changes that you make in your station. And this is helpful if somehow you made a change and in an antenna that you had up for a couple of years. You can always go back to the initial installation when everything was new, everything was right, and if you wrote down how the antenna was performing, then you have something to compare it to. Changes in your station are also a part of the log. KK4JBQ.
Roger that. I do. I have two logs, actually. When I started with one of the little pocket logs. And that's where the Australian contact is. But I've put it in one of these drawers here somewhere and can't find it. But I do keep notes in my log of changes to stations. It's not as detailed as it needs to be, but I don't have a whole lot of room to write. I got a little comment section. But anytime I make a change, it goes in, the comments go in red ink, and I just put a little note out here, you know, hey, new antenna, or whatever changes I've added. I've got quite a few in here. Also, Larry, I have, and as far to answer your question, I didn't log any of these with Logbook of the World or anything like that. I don't need to. I stuck a stamp on a QSL card and mailed it straight to Australia. And he confirmed my contact. So that's, you can have Logbook of the World all you want. I got a piece of paper to stick right here on the wall. And if the internet goes down, guess what? It's still on the wall.
Well, that is something that'll never fail you, of course, if you make person-to-person contact. And really, I think the folks who are the folks who are very fond of paper, the award paper I'm talking about, who want to get DXCC and papers like that. The awards are always based on logging through a bureau of some sort. And while I've got the key down, I wanted to mention to you that I was going through some materials that I've had for years, and I found an official Yaesu logbook. I don't know how I came by it. Honestly, I can't remember purchasing it myself. Maybe I got it at a ham fest. But it doesn't have a mark in it. It's brand new. An official Yaesu logbook. I'm saving it for you. KK4JBQ.
No, I love Yaesu, so I will I'll cherish it. But something else I was going to tell you, and it just totally slipped my mind. That happens a lot here lately. But yeah, so I know what it was. So, you know, change gears here again. You know, Lewis, my oldest son, got married last Thursday. And that was quite the thing. You know, when they move out of the house, that's, you know, it's not a lot of finality to it, I guess. But, boy, when he put that ring on her finger, it hit me like a brick. This old boy ain't coming back home, you know. So, I just, it was pretty emotional, really. Me and Anna just, I mean, we just, you know, I mean, it's my son. You know, I mean, I don't know what to say. But it was a wonderful ceremony. We had a really good time.
Y'all still in here later? I'll be back later if y'all still here. I gotta go take my insulin. KI4LZI.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Andy. We hope to be here and see you again, or hear you again. I'm glad you mentioned that, Chad. From the point of view of the father, when he put the ring on her finger, I have never really heard that from the experience of the father of the bride, or the father of the groom, I guess it is. You were dating a daughter, right? And you're not losing your son. But that's a bit. See, Donna and I have had no children, and so all of those, the whole package, we've never experienced that. So we won't, you know, we won't have grandchildren. a big deal to you right now, as I understand it. KK4JBQ.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I spent most of their childhood in another country, especially the critical years. And, you know, it's, with a grandchild, it's the word redemption comes into play for me. Is, you know, first deployment was, told it we'd be gone for 4 months. 18 months later, I came home. That was the first one. And then the second one was, oh, I don't know, 14 months, something like that. And, you know, it, for a child, that's, boy, that's some critical years there. And it's just, you know, with a grandchild, I guess I can do things with them that I wasn't able to do with my own children. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, indeed. That, well, you can redeem in many ways. And I think the grandchild, I see where you're coming from. I really do. I understand that. And I think Lewis will understand too. KK4JBQ.
AO listening. Just heard you guys in here and thought I'd stop in and say hey.
Good.
Only.
4JBQ, this is my other cousin that lives next to Chris on the farm. So, Dale, I'd like to introduce you to Larry, KK4JBQ. And, Chris, you still in there?
Oh, I'm still here, KO4QLG.
Yeah. It's great to meet you, too. Second cousin, that is number two cousin, I don't know. I suppose I didn't know you were a ham. Welcome in here.
I was about to go to bed and I decided to jump on the radio, try to find some DX, and there wasn't really any that I could work or that I wanted to work. So I turned on my UHF VHF radio and heard you guys. So I just thought I'd pop in here. You doing all right over there, Chad and Chris?
I'll make sure I got it, Dale. Right. Yeah. My oldest son got married Thursday. And me and Larry and Chris just talking about that and all. But other than that, things are good. Just getting older by the day.
Normal too, Dale.
That's good. I'm glad to hear y'all are doing all right. And Chad, let your son know that, you know, I said congratulations from us over here. Mom fell at work. She's hurt pretty bad. She's having to get around with a walker and having to work anyway, doing light duty.
When did she fall, Dale?
Somebody left a duffel bag laying out in the middle of the floor, and I think it was in the office area. But anyway, she tripped over and cracked her hip, and she can't walk more than 2 foot without a walker. But they put her on light duty, and she's working like 8 hours a day. So, but anyway, I didn't mean to bust in here on y'all, your conversation.
Wasn't not a problem at all. Not a problem. But it was good hearing from you, and I'm glad you're doing well. and I'll honk the horn at you next time I come by.
I heard y'all talking about QSL cards earlier. You said you got one from Australia?
Oh, Australia, yeah.
Too many countries. I've got Canada, Australia, Italy, and I think that's about it for DX. And I'm waiting on one from Northern Ireland and Africa, South Africa.
What a deal. I don't log any of mine. I was telling Larry, I don't log any of mine's own logbook of the world or anything because I'm just not into the DX thing. I mean, this guy in Australia, you know, we talked for probably 20, 30 minutes, just, you know, just having a conversation, you know. That's my kind of, you know, DX, and I'm not interested in, you know, I'm not seeing anything wrong with it. I'm just saying it's just not my cup of tea. I want to sit down and have a conversation with the fella, you know.
Okay.
Well, it was nice talking to you, and I'm glad you dropped by. Hey, do me a favor, check in. I'm going to call the net tomorrow night. Come swing by and check in with me. I'd like to get you in my log.
All right, well, I'll say 7-3, good to talk to you guys, and we'll catch you later. KY4AO, I'll be clear.
Have a good night, sir.
Good to meet you, and Chad's calling the net tomorrow night, as he said. That begins at 9 o'clock. KK4, JPQ.
So, one other thing I wanted to tell you was... So let me make sure I got this, Larry. So when Lewis got up, you know, to stand up, they had a cross, and he went and stood in front of the cross with the pastor, waiting for the bride to come. And as the groomsmen came down, they all came and stood in front of him and shook his hand. And every time they shook his hand, they put something in his hand, and he'd stick it in his pocket. Well, by the time it got to the last groomsman, he was running out of pockets, you know. And I could never see what it was. I didn't think too much about it, I guess, till after the ceremony was over. But I went and talked with the best man and said, hey, I saw y'all. You know, what were y'all giving Lewis when he was, you know, up there waiting on the bride? And he said, well, we stopped by Chick-fil-A and bought a 20-piece chicken nugget set, and we were giving him chicken nuggets. He had to put chicken nuggets in his pocket up at the altar. But each time a groomsman came, he said they doubled the amount of chicken nuggets that he got. So he was, you know, stuffing chicken nuggets in his jacket pocket and pants pocket, and I think there's a couple in his back pocket. But we just laughed, just thought that was a hoot.
Something I tell you, what's the truth? One would think that your family, one of your family traits is prankster. But these were groomsmen and maybe all not part of the family, but it caught on, don't you think? I have never heard things happen during a wedding ceremony. And also think that, oh well, anyway, what I think. During the ceremony, which is a solemn thing, you know, to pull a prank like that, kind of testy.
After the ceremony, me and his brother, Perry, my middle son, we snuck up in the parking lot, and I took the horn off of my Bobcat, and we wired the horn into the right brake light, and stuck the horn up in the brake light housing, and then screwed the cover back on the tail light so he couldn't get the horn out. So that was pretty funny. Actually, I've got the video of it. I'll send you the video. But when the ceremony, when the whole party, wedding party, when it was over, it wasn't over till 9:30 that night. Everybody lined up with sparklers, and they came down with sparklers, and then, you know, threw their stuff in the Jeep, and he, you know, got in the Jeep, and it's a straight drive, so when he started it up, that horn went off, and he just, you know, he just had this look of confusion on his face and just looked at me real funny, and we all were laughing, and I just, you know, I didn't know what to, you know, he just looked at me with confusion, and I just kind of said, hey, are you going to, you know, was thinking to myself, are you going to stay here and mess with this vehicle, or are you going to, you know, are you going to go, you know, be with your bride? And about that time, he took off. Dude, he was gone. And I didn't, you know, realize the horn was that loud, but we could hear him, I don't know, probably 3/4 of a mile going down the road. Just off into the darkness. And got about 3 miles up the road and got pulled over and got a ticket.